Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent. This week on the HR Power Hour, we're going to be talking with Peter Burke. He's the president and co-founder of Best Companies Group. He's going to be talking about the Best Places to Work program. As his guests, we're going to have Jessica Palladino and Kelly Nelson, who are the co-chairs of the Best Places to Work here in Maine. Peter, thanks for being on the show.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me, David.
I understand you have two guests that are going to join us, and actually they're here in the studio with me. Do you want to introduce both of them as your co-chairs up here in Maine?
Hi, I'm Jessica Palladino.
And I'm Kelly Nelson.
Wonderful. And you guys are the co-chairs, right, up here in Maine?
We are.
For the Best Places to Work. So, Peter, why don't you give us a little overview about this program and what it's all about first so that the audience gets a good understanding of it?
Well, the first part about this is that, you know, a lot of people have heard about Best Places to Work programs. Many are familiar with Fortune Magazine's Top 100 Best Companies to Work For. But about 8 or 9 years ago now, we got together with the Sherm Maine State Council, and they wanted to create a Best Places to Work in Maine. And at the time, there were not that many programs around the country. Our company, Best Companies Group, works with organizations like the Sherm State Council to create and manage these programs. And what it means is that our organization will survey the participating companies. And we're the ones who do an employer survey, then we do an employee engagement survey, and we determine who's good enough to make the list. And then we turn that list over, and then the winners are recognized in the main biz special supplement that comes out. But there's also a huge event in October. Jess and Kelly have just been phenomenal running this event and really recognizing the winners, and have turned it into these two have turned pretty much single-handedly have turned this into one of the best places to work programs in the country, and it really is quite phenomenal what they've been able to do in Maine in terms of getting participation and honoring the winners at the event in October.
No, I think that's great. I know we have a deadline coming up, so I want to make sure that we say that throughout the show. What is the deadline, and what exactly is it that companies have to look for at that deadline? Jessica, you want to take that on?
Sure. The deadline is May 24th, and that's when all of the people that would like to participate in the program need to have contacted Best Companies Group to determine whether or not they're going to participate in the survey process.
So that's in 1 week, because we're going to be airing here on Saturday.
Yeah.
And so that's 1 week for companies to get in there. What are some of the things that they need to fill out? What are some of the paperwork, or where can they go to do that? Kelly?
Sure. What they'll need to do is register, and they can find information and a link to register on the website, which is bestplacesme.com.
And that's where they can go and get the paperwork.
Correct. There's a link for the assessment and the registration and all of the details and contact information there.
Great. Peter, when you're looking at companies that should be interested in these type of events or being looked to be recognized, what is it that a company needs to think about for the criteria?
Well, I let me add something to what they need to do, because when they visit bestplacestoworkme.com, they just need to register by the 24th of May. And that's pretty much just raising their hand saying, yes, I want to participate. And then we will conduct the surveys after that. Some people have seen that deadline and said, well, I don't have time to do all the surveying before then. Well, no, that's not true. They just need to, you know, sort of say, give us a little bit of information when they register about who they are and their main contact, and the surveying happens after that. So so there's still plenty of time to make that decision and go to the website and sign up by the 24th. To answer your question, you know, there's a huge misconception that just adding wonderful benefits and hoping for the best will work and will make you a best place to work. And that's actually quite the opposite. If you do those things and then nothing else, it may even actually have the opposite effect. A best place to work, at least the philosophy that we use, is if you want to know if it's a great place to work, ask the employees what they think. And they'll be honest, and they will tell us everything about the corporate culture and communication and you know, what, you know, can they trust the leadership? Are they treated fairly? Do they have a good relationship with their supervisor? What's the working environment like? Will they give extra effort on behalf of the organization? Those are all the things that we're looking for. So the companies that have been successful and have won this award have figured out that it's all about the culture that they create. It's about how the employees are being treated. It's about the relationships that are being built. And it's, and a lot of times that doesn't cost anything, except perhaps a few hours of training and making people aware of the fact that there are different things that motivate people. You know, some people are motivated by making progress. Other people are motivated by recognition. And so when you get to understand the drivers of that engagement and how connected someone is to their employer, the better off they're going to be and the more success they're going to have. So that is sort of a long way of answering your question that, you know, companies that have been successful in implementing some of those things, focusing on the relationships they have with their employees, those are all things that create environments where employees love to come to work. And that's, those are the companies that are going to be successful in this program.
Jessica, you're here in Maine, obviously, and you've talked to a number of companies who are interested in this program. Why is it that they find it interesting or valuable to be a Best Places to Work organization?
I think the reason that the companies find it valuable is it's real feedback from the employees. They receive feedback surveys, as Peter has said, and the information is provided to best companies in an anonymous format. So when the employer receives the information, they're merely receiving an aggregate of it. They're getting true, insightful information from the employees.
You say anonymous. How many questions are there, and what are kind of like some typical things that they might be looking at?
So, Peter, please correct me if I'm wrong, but on the employee survey, I believe there are about 75, am I right?
Yeah, there's eight different categories. There's about 70-some-odd questions. And we've been doing this for 10 years, and I still call them questions. They're really statements that are posed to the employees, and they're asked to either agree or disagree with them along a Likert scale for those statisticians in your audience. And there's statements like, my supervisor treats me fairly. And then they're either going to disagree strongly with that, all the way through agree strongly with that. And it takes, you know, our data is showing and our numbers are showing us that it takes anywhere from 10 to 12 minutes to fill out the survey if you're an employee. There are two open-ended questions at the end, so that variance generally is how much time people are spending on the open-ended questions and filling those out. And then there's probably seven or so demographic questions where we ask about age and length of tenure and gender and those kinds of things, so that when we put together the employee feedback report for everybody that participates, that we can break it down by demographics to see what those different groups think and see if there's a variance among them.
So, Jess, we were just talking about what's on the question, and they want the feedback. Tell me a little bit about why you think that they think it's prestigious. What is it that you and Kelly have done? Because obviously Peter said you're doing a great job of promoting this here in Maine. What have you done to really elevate? And Kelly, feel free to jump in on this. What do you think you've done to really elevate that to make it a big deal to be a Best Places to Work winner?
I mean, from my perspective, having worked for organizations that have been named to the Best Places list and to organizations that have not yet been successful in naming it to the list, it's really about getting out there and promoting your organization. And as we try to recruit and retain top talent, the way to do that is to really brand your organization as an employer of choice. And by participating in the Best Places to Work in Maine program, you're able to do that. The employees engage in the process. They're able to say what's on their mind and share it. And then if whether or not they're successful or not in making the list, what we have found is the employers take that feedback and really take it to heart and then establish some policies and procedures and some different workflow areas that have been identified as areas and opportunities to improve.
Great. Kelly?
And I would expand to say the employee feedback report that comes, whether or not you're successful in making the list, oftentimes companies will participate knowing that they may not make the list, but the feedback is so valuable to be able to then build your strategies moving forward into that next year, knowing that maybe it's going to take a year or two sometimes to rise to the level of being named a Best Places. I think as we promote and more employees become familiar with what a Best Places to Work in Maine is, there becomes an expectation. And if you're looking to recruit top talent, you're going to start looking for that company that's been named to the Best Places.
You know, somebody might say, playing devil's advocate here for a moment, is this just one of those programs that you can buy into and get and just become a Best Places to Work? As we all know, there are programs out that you can do that. So you can either answer, or Peter, you can answer. Tell me how this is different than something like that. Because is there a fee? And what does that actually get you?
Oh, David, you figured us out. No, every now and then you will hear that, it's, pay to get on a list. Well, first of all, there is a fee to participate, and it's relatively small. It's anywhere from $635 up to $920 or so. And if you need to use paper surveys for the employees, it's a little bit more than that. We like to think that, first of all, paying that doesn't guarantee you anything other than the feedback you're going to get in the employee feedback report. And there are companies that will participate in this program who know they have no shot at making the list, but they want the feedback. And they look at the price of doing that, and it's incredibly cheap compared to what you would have to spend if you just went out and wanted to hire someone to come in and do an employee engagement survey in your company. And even then, it doesn't get you what you need in this report because we provide all of the benchmark reports as well. So you can compare your results with the organizations that made the list. Whether you're on the list or not on the list, you get this report, and you can chart a path to say, okay, here's where we need to improve. I'd like to say that we, as a research company, can do all of this for free, but that just isn't the reality. So we have created a process where not only can we determine who are the best, but we can also provide a service at the same time for everybody that participates that has an extremely high value level. And it's become really an important part of these companies that participate year in and year out.
And I would go on to say that if you do not make the list as a winning company, your company's name is still confidential. So if there's a hesitation because is it negative if we participate and we don't win, nobody's going to know that. So only the companies that make the list are then named.
Now, I think that's important for people to know because that might be somebody out there that thinks to themselves, if I get on the list and I'm obviously not the mm-hmm. Best Places to Work, I don't want to be on that list, right? And
right.
So that's a big deal for people to know that it's anonymous. You're listening to the HR Power Hour, and we will be right back.
If you're responsible for hiring and firing, you know it can be like a roulette wheel. If your new hire turns out to be a bad hire, well, all you've lost is time and money. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Don't gamble with your hiring. We have a better solution. We've helped hundreds of companies like yours find the right talent, and we guarantee it. Career Management Associates delivers people that fit. Go to cmacareer.com.
You're listening to the HR Power Hour, and we are back, and it is presented by cmacareer.com. All right, well, we're talking to a number of wonderful people here about the best places to work. We have Peter, we have Jessica, we have Kelly. The best places to work here in Maine, let's talk a little bit more in depth about that. Kelly, can you give me maybe some eligibility requirements for a company who's thinking about this? They know they have to register by May 24th, 2013 to be considered. But what are some of the eligibility requirements for that?
Sure. The eligibility is 15 employees that work in the state of Maine. So it's rather simple.
Is there any minimum time that they need to be in business or anything like that?
There's not. And Peter, I believe that is simply the only eligibility, correct?
It is. I mean, you have to have 15 employees working in the state of Maine. We'd like to see companies in business for a year, but that doesn't necessarily kick them out if they haven't been in business for a year. But not-for-profits, for-profits, privately owned, publicly owned, government municipalities, colleges, schools, you name it. If you're an employer and have 15 employees, you're eligible. You don't have to be headquartered in Maine either, which is sometimes a question that comes up.
No. Okay, that's great. So tell me a little bit about if a company says I'm a nonprofit, how does it differ? Do they get put in the same category as a for-profit, or are there different levels?
Well, it's yes and no, because I think there were like three questions.
I'm glad I was able to give a very clear question. Maybe I should ask one of them here to answer that question. Yes and no. All right. Are you a lawyer? Just kidding.
No.
Continue.
But to answer your question, we survey everybody. Everybody is sort of on the same playing field, if you will. The employee engagement survey and the data that we get from that makes up 75% of the evaluation. So that's sort of, you know, the other 25% comes from the employer questionnaire, which asks about different policies and HR benefits and things that you're offering. We do split them up into size categories, but as far as breaking them up into industries or profit versus nonprofit, the employee engagement survey was engineered so that you can compare big, small, not-for-profit, for-profit, publicly, privately held. And as you go through the survey, you can really look at the types of questions, statements that we're posing are really not unique to any one kind of business. And that's the beauty of all of this, is that you can compare a manufacturing company to a healthcare company to a nonprofit organization. So that's sort of the longer version of the answer there, is that we're not putting them into subgroups like that, because we're very confident on our ability to determine whether it's a great place to work for the employees that work there. And I think that's an important distinction to make. The policies, the workplace culture, the mission statement, all of those things are different for every company, as are the employees that will love working there. It all depends on what's important to you. Companies that are successful in this program have figured out what their mission is, what their corporate culture wants to be, and they're very good at making sure that people who work there align with those things. So you could be working at a best place to work in Maine, in Kennebunk, and then walk across the street to another best places to work in Maine and have it be a horrible place to work for you. And so I think that's a big misconception. Everybody's doing exactly the same thing to be a best place to work. That's not true. What they are doing is they are making sure that the people that work there are aligned with the mission and the culture that they've got established. And as you go down this road, you know, that can sometimes be a tough transition. Some people may be invited to leave because they don't match. And the companies that are really good at hiring for what's going to work best in their organization are the ones that are going to be on this list. So that can be true no matter what kind of business you have.
You talked a little bit about different categories in terms of, you know, number of employees, I suspect, is one of the categories. Tell me a little bit about that, Jessica, Kelly.
So we have a small and medium-sized category, and then we have a large category. And the people that are named to the list after the list comes out are then divided, if you will, into the small medium, which is 15 or more employees up to 249. And then 250 and more is the large category.
When somebody is looking at those categories, it's just purely done on number of employees. It's not done on volume of sales or anything else, correct?
No, just number of employees.
Okay.
No, and to add to that, those are the number of employees in the U.S., not in Maine.
Not necessarily in Maine, right.
Okay, right. How about if they're an international company?
Well, but any kind of company is eligible as long as they have the minimum number of employees working in Maine.
Okay, so it's by the number of employees just in the state of Maine.
Correct.
For eligibility purposes, but in terms of dividing into different categories, we ask everybody that applies also how many employees do you have working in the United States, and then we go back to that criteria to determine which category they are in, and we do that for a simple reason. It's tough, you know, in a lot of the states we're in, you know, there might be a Microsoft office in Portland. You know, they've got 25 employees. Well, they're eligible for the program, but would anybody ever consider them a small, you know, organization? Well, no, they're huge. And they get the benefits and things that go along with that. So that's mainly why we wanted to make sure that when we're dividing these organizations up by category, that we're looking at the number of U.S. employees just to make sure that we're not falling into that trap of calling a really big organization, you know, a small employer based upon, you know, sort of what everybody knows. And I think the other thing that goes along with that, too, is that these companies don't get categorized until after the assessment's done. So we're not taking the top number of companies in one category and the top number of companies in another category. We're going through this assessment and determining who's good enough to make the list, and those who are, then, you know, get categorized and ranked. And all the others that don't make the list, you know, they're sent a notification letter as well, but we'll also get their feedback report to show them, you know, where they fell short. And by the way, just because you don't make the list doesn't mean you're a bad place to work. That's another misconception. Oh, I didn't make the list. It must be horrible. Or I fell, you know, from 5 to, you know, number 10 in my category. I must be, you know, well, you know, what went horribly wrong? Well, nothing. The companies that are on this list, you know, that the average percentage of employees that are considered engaged is 92%, I think, 92-93%. So in other words, 93% of the employees working at these winning companies are connected and engaged. When the national average is 41%, that's a pretty remarkable list of winning companies. And even those who don't make the list, a lot of them are still really, really good places to work. They're just not the best.
When a company wins the best places to work, and we'll get into a little more of the details, but just one question, do they get to use a logo or banner? Do they get to, you know, scream from the tallest mountain that, you know, we're our best places to work? How does that come about?
We actually encourage that. If you are named a winning company, you have the right to use the logo. We encourage you to put it on every communication that you have with the public, with your internal employees. We do a gala event in October to recognize the companies that made the list. We have an awards banquet. That's where we actually rank them. It's the first time that they know where they fall in the ranking. So they get to yell and scream and shout that evening. And I think what helps them to make it successful in the recognition is that they use it consistently.
So let's get back to a little bit of the details. There are two questionnaires, correct, that are provided based on the information I've read, which is Employee Benefits and Policies Questionnaire and Employee Engagement and Satisfaction. I should say Employer Benefits and Policies Questionnaire and Employee Engagement and Satisfaction Survey. We talk about the number of questions. That's all well and good. But does every employee take it? And what is the ratio in terms of number of respondents that come in? Because sometimes surveys can be skewed. We know that. Not even having to be a statistician, Peter, to know that answer. But, you know, tell me about what is the requirement for getting surveys back to make it a realistic response?
Well, I'm not a statistician either. And quite honestly, Father McGowan at Boston College was not pleased with me in statistics 101. I think I just barely passed that class. But we did know what we didn't know. So we went out and had all of our surveying and our methodology tested, pretty much got the blessing from several different PhD sources that said, "Yep, what you're doing is accurate." And we made a few tweaks in here to make sure that the data that we're collecting is statistically relevant and statistically credible. So what that means, going back to your question, is that we will survey everybody in an organization up to 250 employees. And again, we're only surveying those employees in Maine. So if you have up to 250 employees working in Maine, we will send out a survey to all of them. And we'll do that via email, or if they need to use paper, so people don't have email addresses, we'll do that as well. But once we get above 250, then we start doing random selections. So once, if you have anywhere between 250 and, say, 500 employees, again, it'll be a 250-employee sample that we'll do a random sample on. If you have between 500 and 2,500, we'll survey up to 350 people. And then if you have more than 2,500 employees working in Maine, we'll do a random selection of 400 of those employees. Now, the response rate is not everybody, we don't need 100% response rate. You know, we need somewhere in the neighborhood of 40% for that data to be statistically credible. The companies that have 15 to 24 employees, we need a little higher response rate because there's so few of them. And again, for those that are statisticians in your audience, you'll sort of understand that concept, is that the fewer the employees, the higher response rate we need just for that data to be credible. So we're looking at more like 80% response rate for those organizations that have 15 to 24 employees. But above that, it gets up to 40%. And we'll you know, we look at that and pay pretty close attention to that. So all of that has sort of been worked out in the in our planning and in our process and our methodology testing that we've done.
So a company's in Maine, a company's in New Hampshire, a company's in Vermont, a company's in many different areas. Tell me a little about, can they apply in each state independently, or how does that work?
Well, we run programs, let's see, in the surrounding states, or at least in New England. We work in Maine, we work in Vermont, Connecticut, Rhode Island. I know New York's not considered New England by many, so the two states up in that area where we don't have programs are in New Hampshire and in Massachusetts. But the whole idea of this is that being named a best place to work in Maine or a best place to work in Rhode Island, which that list is, we just released that list, is we're serving the employees who work in that state. So you really can't share the data between states. The only way you would possibly be able to do that is if we surveyed everybody and then just sort of indicated which ones are in Rhode Island, which ones are in Maine, and which ones are in New York or wherever it might be, and separate out that data and then make our judgment based upon the data from the employees in that state. So there's not a whole lot of data sharing going on because it's we would have to survey everybody at once, and then we'd have to make sure that the data doesn't get old. So if those programs are at a different time of the year, you know, if they're more than 2 months apart, then the data starts to get old. So there's many reasons why we can't do that. In some instances, it has been possible in Maine. I can't think of an example of where we've done that, but it's possible but not likely.
You're listening to the HR Power Hour, and we will be right back.
Are you frustrated with medical care today? Does it make you angry that your doctor spends more time looking at the computer screen than at you? Does it seem like your doctor is out the door in 5 minutes? There is a better alternative. At Champy Family Practice, Dr. Michael Champy and his dedicated staff make taking care of patients their priority. They are a cash-friendly, direct-pay practice, which is the perfect option for people with no insurance, high deductibles, and health savings accounts. Unlike other practices, they post their prices in the office and even online. Get modern medical care delivered the old-fashioned way. For more information, call ChampyFamilyPractice.com. That's C-I-A-M-P-I. Or call 774-1222. Champy Family Practice is located at 380 Lincoln Street in South Portland. Champy Family Practice. Continuing a tradition of medical excellence in Greater Portland since 1959.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com. And we're talking with Peter, Jessica, and Kelly from the best places to work in Maine. Yes, and we're having fun talking about it, aren't we, guys?
Absolutely.
All right, that's good.
Love it.
Hey, you know, we were just talking about those two surveys. And so we have the Employer Benefit and Policies Questionnaire and the Employee Engagement and Satisfaction Survey. Could either of you provide, or someone here, provide some more information on those surveys, maybe some of the deadlines, some of the things that are going to be talked about on them, and give a better overview of them would be great. Go ahead, Jen.
Sure. So the employer response is actually sent out to the employer first. That's where they answer all of the questions relating to policy and benefits and such. And Peter, correct me if I'm wrong, because I really rely on Best Companies Group to remind me of that deadline. But that's typically sent out the end of May, right after the deadline of saying I want to participate in the process. And it's due back to the Best Companies Group by the mid part of June.
Right. June 14th is the deadline for the employer questionnaire.
After a few years, I finally got the hang of this and all the deadlines.
Yes, you do.
And then the employee responses and surveys are actually sent out as soon as those are sent out. The employer responses are sent back to Best Companies Group. Then they send out the link or the paper format to the employees. Those actually need to be in by the beginning of July because the list is actually formatted and distributed to Kelly and myself the first full week in August. So we will know who has made the list the first week in August.
And then you protect that list.
We are smart with our lives.
Protect it and guard it with your lives. Yeah. Okay, that's great. Peter, are there any other deadlines or anything they need to be aware of on those two surveys?
No. I mean, it's. I think maybe a word of, I don't know, best practice maybe. A lot of organizations will, you know, both of those surveys are on the website, bestplacestoworkme.com. So we're pretty transparent about all of that. Confidentiality is of utmost importance to us. So whether it's email addresses that they're submitting to us or the employee data that gets submitted to us, none of that gets shared. The information they give to us on the employer questionnaire, however, and that's about their, it's factual information. It's benefits and what they do that's fun for their employees. We actually will look at that and use that to help with the profiles that Maine Biz writes and also with the celebration and the script writing that goes on for the gala event, which is a ton of fun. But you can go to the website, look at those surveys, and start to prepare a little bit. You have 2 weeks to fill out the employer survey, which for you know, that's plenty of time. But we also know people's schedules are pretty busy, so you might want to go and take a peek at that employer survey first, just to kind of get an idea of what it is that we're going to be asking for, so that when you do get the link, you're not, you know, you're a little bit more prepared to fill that out and get that back to us. But no, other than that, they know their stuff there in Maine.
Okay, that's good. So now, after all these results come back, you receive the results, Jessica and Kelly. Kelly, talk to us about the big event, the big, you know, awards dinner here in Maine. What exactly happens? Tell us some of the things that are coming up so people can get excited about it.
Absolutely. So once companies have been notified that they have made or not made the list, we'll focus on those that do, because those are the ones that we then have this award banquet for and celebrate their success. We will reach out and work in partnership with Maine Biz. Maine Biz will write profiles for all of the winning companies. That's put together into an annual publication that's distributed at the event. Jessica and I reach out to each of the companies to get their attendee list, so you can bring as many people as you want from your company. You purchase tickets to come and bring them. We do a great presentation of the award winners in a PowerPoint format. The night of the event, we have a great dinner, a nice celebration with each of the folks, and then we get down to business. And this is where the room gets quiet for a minute, people get settled in, and we start the countdown. And one of the things that we're really clear about is there's no last company on the companies that made the list. The fact that you made it is successful. So we will wind down the evening going through that list, and once we reach the number one company in the small, medium, and the number one company in the large, it is pretty celebratory.
No, I bet it is. And for all those listening outside of the state of Maine, Maine Biz is a local publication that does information on companies throughout the state of Maine, talks about the business profiles of a company, and gives up-to-date news on a weekly or biweekly basis. Since we're heard across the country, I want to make sure that people listening would understand what Maine Biz is. All right, so if you're not a Best Places to Work, you're someone who either didn't make it but want to still participate in the event in terms of either sponsorships or other ways, how can somebody go about doing that?
Sure. So we still have sponsorship opportunities available, and they could certainly reach out to Kelly or myself, or go to the bestplacestoworkme.com and find all that information out there. We occasionally look for volunteers for the evening of the event, because there's a lot of work that goes into prepping and celebrating those successes. So we ask for volunteers to help us out that evening.
So companies that are sponsoring this or helping it don't have to be, obviously, a Best Places to Work. How does that translate in terms of companies understanding that, hey, this is a big deal, a big event, and I want to be part of it, if they're not one of the Best Places to Work? Does that have any conflict with that at all? Do companies go, well, if I wasn't a Best Places to Work, if it's okay to have my name up with them on the sponsorship board?
It's really an opportunity for some visibility for them as a sponsor. It also allows them to attend. There's a package that comes with sponsorship. So maybe this was not your particular year, but maybe next year will be. And it'll help you to understand what happens the night of the event. But the visibility is probably the key.
And I think that's the key right there, isn't it? The visibility, so that you can still get associated with such a good program and associated with such a good group, and then go out there and sell it and talk about the great program itself it is. Peter, when you're talking about the differences that you mentioned that Kelly and Jessica have done a great job in this state. Tell me what it is that they've done that's made it so different from some of the other programs that you've done.
Well, I think, first of all, the commitment to this program and this process, it's multi-level. Yes, it's getting the word out and promoting and getting companies to get involved, but it's also a commitment to making sure that there's a program that's successful that's helping companies. I mean, this is all about helping organizations and raising the bar of workplace excellence. And that's what we've seen over the past 8 years is that, you know, the winning companies are getting better and better and better and better. And you could have I had somebody come up and say, hey, our scores didn't change and we dropped 5 spots on the list. I said, well, that's because it's getting more competitive and there's more companies participating than ever before. And that's a direct result of what's happening. But the byproduct of the HR community really getting some visibility. You know, you talked about the sponsorships and attending the event, but when you go to the event and these sponsors are wandering around, they're seeing the leaders of HR and the heads of the companies. I mean, it's for so long the HR professional was just sort of seen as a keep me out of court, make sure I hire the right people, and you know, just be quiet. Well, now that's just this whole revolution going on of these are major players when it comes to management strategies. And now you've got a whole room full of companies where the senior management, the CEOs, the COOs, and the directors of HR and the head of HR, they're all, you know, there at the table, and they're all celebrating together. And it's great to see that spotlight being shown, if that's the right way to say that word, on the HR person who's made this all possible. So, you know, Kelly and Jess have just taken it to heart. The mission is there. They're getting companies to participate. They're creating this event. It's just so much fun and so exciting. When companies go, they have no idea where they rank. And the fact that it's voluntary, it's really, I mean, they don't benefit personally, financially from this at all. It's a Maine State Council initiative. But their work and their commitment to all of this has made all of the difference in the world. Not to mention that they're just fantastic people to begin with. So it really is, Maine is very lucky to have these two really pushing and making sure this program has grown. And when I say it's one of the best in the companies, when you look at the size of Maine and just the response and the size of the list and the people who are in attendance at the event, it's better than a lot of our bigger states.
Now, you know, you talked a little bit about partnerships that help you. So the Maine State Council and some of the others, you guys want to talk a little bit about that? I think it's important that they understand that it's not just one group. It's a bunch of people that have helped with this.
You're absolutely correct. And our success is because of great partnerships. Jessica and I have had the benefit of working with many of our partners for several years now and recognize that it is a SHRM Maine State Council event presented by us. However, our partners that are so dedicated to this include the Maine State Chamber of Commerce, the Maine Department of Labor, the Department of Economic Community Development, the Maine HR Convention, as well as Maine Biz, and it simply would not be made possible here in the state without those partners.
No, it's a great group, too. You're talking about key leadership groups here in Maine in the HR field, and I think it's awesome. Are the chapters playing a role in this in terms of the local, you know, SHRM chapters, HRASM or Central Maine? How do they play a role? Are they playing through the state chapter?
It's been through the state chapter, but they also have recognized the best places to work in Maine program at an individual chapter level. I know that Kelly and I in the past have gone to the different chapters and spoken about the best places to work in Maine program and how that could benefit an employer in the state of Maine. We've also done it through the Maine Chamber of Commerce. We've taken a little road show, if you will, and driven across the state and spoken to different leaders. And it doesn't necessarily have to be an HR leader. It's really about your business and promoting your business, so we speak before business leaders all the time.
No, I think that's great. The deadline, registration, May 24th, 2013. That's just to be registered. Doesn't mean you're going to immediately have surveys sent to you, but to get registered to say you want to participate, correct?
Correct.
Peter, what else would you like to share about the best places to work? We have about a minute left.
Sign up. You won't regret it. On several levels, if you win, the marketing, recruiting advantages,
yes.
You're going to have a ton of fun at the event. Even if you don't win, I think you will find value in the report and the information that you get back. And if you've been a little bit nervous in the past about doing surveys with your employees, you really need to to really get engaged in that practice, because more and more companies are, and it's proving to be an extremely valuable process, providing information that's just very useful and actionable. But that's it for my end. We're looking forward to another great year. Jess, Kelly, anything you guys want to share?
Nothing other than we hope that you would be able to see us at the October 10th event.
Well, you know, I just saw you up at the main HR convention there, and you had your booth out there and talking about the best places to work, so I think that's great. So you're out there talking about it to everybody.
Absolutely. Yep.
We just got to convince New Hampshire and Mass to get involved, right, Peter? That's the key.
That would be nice.
Yeah, that's great. Well, I want to thank you all very much for being on the show today. Again, we're talking to Peter, we're talking to Jessica, and we're talking to Kelly. You guys did a great job talking about the best places to work here in Maine. Remember, registration deadline, May 24th, 2013. Go to bestplacestoworkme.com. Thanks again for being on the show.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thanks, David. Really enjoyed it.
And you're listening to the HR Power Hour. Okay, we're talking now with Bud Bernstein. New England Law Publishers or MaineHR.com. Bud, thanks for being on the show.
Oh, a pleasure, David, always.
Well, you know, last week we were just at the great Maine HR convention for 2013. I got to tell you, just a great job as always. Excellent job. But one of the things that you brought up was this rehabilitation of an HR professional, Heather Abbott. And we're going to play the video clip, in this case, the audio clip, I should say, that was done by CNN of a conversation with her and the reporter. And could you give us the information on this, the behind-the-scenes backlog?
Yes, indeed. Well, Heather Abbott is just a spectacular HR professional, a friend of ours from Rhode Island, where she works for Raytheon. And she has a great reputation in SHRM circles for her work and responsibility as an HR manager. She was one of the individuals on Boylston Street a few weeks back and was injured in the bombing and made a very courageous decision to have her foot amputated. It was a difficult medical call, you'll hear through the discussions, but what you'll hear is just the power and conviction behind this person who is not looking back but only looking forward. And so we just thought, since our convention theme this year was Maine HR making a difference, that this young woman, Heather Abbott, has made a difference in so many people's lives as they've worked through the corporate environment, as they've gone through HR processes at various companies where she's worked, that it's time we indeed made a difference in her life. So we showed the video, which is an interview with Anderson Cooper and her soon after her injury. We show that to the audience, and we encouraged our friends and audience to make donations on her behalf, which you can do by going to gofundme.com/Heather Abbott.
And that's HEATHERABBOTT, correct?
That is it.
Okay, great. You know, we're going to play the clip right now, and then we'll be right back after that clip.
Can you tell me about what you remember from that day?
Yeah, that day I came up to Boston with a group of friends to watch the Red Sox game and then go watch the runners on the finish, close to the finish line at a bar called Forum. And I remember when we got to the bar, the bouncer was standing at the door taking people's IDs, and my two girlfriends were in front of me. I was the last one in line, and our other friends were already inside the bar. And we heard a loud noise. Everybody, I think all of us, turned around. I know I saw a lot of smoke. I saw people, crying and running. And I immediately thought it was some sort of a terrorist attack.
That was your initial thought?
It was, because it reminded me of something I saw on the September 11th events. Hmm. Before I could even think of what to do, the second blast happened, and I found myself catapulted into the bar on the ground.
So it actually lifted you up?
Yes.
And blew you through the entrance of the bar?
Yeah.
Wow.
It did, and I saw one of my friends in front of me, and everybody was just running towards the back of the bar, to the exit outside. And I remember thinking, like, is that the right thing to do? Like, what if there's another one? As I started to think of that, I realized I couldn't move. I felt like my foot was on fire. I was in a lot of pain, and I couldn't stand up. Hmm. So I learned later that I started crawling towards the exit, and I was just saying, somebody please help me. Hmm. People kept running by, and a woman luckily heard me say it and came over and tried to give me a hand. She asked another woman to assist her, and they both were trying to get me to the back.
To the back of the bar?
To the back of the bar, and the exit where the outside was.
You said it felt like your foot was on fire. Did you check it out?
No, I felt like it was on fire, and I thought, if I look at it, I'm not going to keep going. It's going to scare me so much that I'm not going to move.
So you didn't even look down?
No, I didn't look down until I did look at one point when I was being carried down at the ground, and I saw a trail of blood.
What's going through your mind at a time like that?
I was just hoping I wasn't going to die. Mm. And that I'd get in that ambulance in time, and I also was in excruciating pain that I wanted to end. Mm.
Did anybody do a tourniquet at any point?
They did, yeah. They tied a belt around my leg. My friend Tommy gave his belt, and they tied it around my leg. And I remember that hurting a lot.
Mm. But it's essential to stop the bleeding.
Right, yeah.
So they put you in the ambulance?
They put me in the ambulance. I remember them putting an IV in me and cutting my clothes. And I later learned that my clothes were sent to the FBI.
Hmm. Because you were so close?
Yes.
So you get to the hospital. At what point did you learn about your injury?
I don't think it was until the next day when I woke up from the anesthesia.
What did they say to you when you woke up the next day?
They told me I had a very serious injury to my foot, that my ankle was broken, all the little bones in my heel were broken, there was some tissue damage, and that they would be doing another surgery to really get in there and take a good look at it and determine whether they'd be able to save it or not.
And you were presented with a choice, mm-hmm. About whether or not to try to keep your foot.
Right.
I can't imagine being presented with that choice.
I couldn't have imagined it until I was faced with it myself.
So in the end, you decided to let them take off the foot.
I did.
When you made the decision, was it what were you feeling?
There almost wasn't a choice, because the way they described my life being with the option of keeping the foot, I couldn't imagine having a life where I really couldn't do anything for myself. So I really never doubted the decision.
And how do you feel now?
I still feel as though I made the right decision. I think the rehabilitation is going to be difficult. I think it's going to be a lot of work. But I made progress every day. So I feel confident that, eventually I'll get there.
You got a great attitude.
If I didn't, I won't get to where I want to be.
Do you think a lot about that day, or do you prefer not to think about it?
I prefer not to think about it. I haven't focused a lot of energy on recounting the events. I think at first I did a couple times, what if I had gone with the first crowd of people that went over to the bar? Maybe this wouldn't happen to me. What if I decided that I wasn't going to go to the game this year? And I think I did that for a little while before I said, well, what if anything? That's not what happened. Hmm. This is what happened, and this is what you have to deal with.
And you're dealing with it.
I am.
I'm so impressed by the people who rushed in to help, people like yourself, who, took off their belts and tied tourniquets. And
yeah, that I think, from this experience, my initial, takeaway has been that people will do things that you would just never expect them to. I mean, the folks who actually got me out there, got me outside and onto the ambulance, didn't know me. They had no obligation to help me. They were really putting their own lives at risk because they didn't know what was going to happen next.
Do you think about the people who did this to you?
I haven't thought about it yet. I just kind of want to stay focused on rehabilitating myself, and then maybe I'll learn those details later.
But that at this point, that's not important to you?
No.
Just getting better.
Just getting better.
I wish you strength in the days ahead.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Heather Abbott, her spirit is so strong. A fund has been set up to help pay for Heather's recovery and the prosthetic devices she's going to need for the rest of her life. To make a contribution, go to GoFundMe.com/Heather Abbott. You can find that link, plus links to other victims' funds, on our website at ac360.com.
So that's quite a moving story, don't you think, Bud? I mean, quite a courageous woman for making that type of decision.
Yeah, and you know, as it ties into HR and the business world, you know, it's really all about accountability and responsibility. We had a keynote at the convention by the author Cy Wakeman. I believe she's been on your show a couple times, David, right?
Yes, and she's coming up again for talking about her new book, her second time it's coming up.
Yeah, and it's a great new book. And one of the metrics or measures of HR function that she is talking about is a new metric involving how you measure the accountability in an organization and in individuals and the role HR plays. And when we just stumbled across this tape of Heather, we said, well, wow, that just speaks volumes to her accountability and responsibility. I mean, you heard the clip, just the power of the decision she made, and that, you know, she said, well, maybe I shouldn't have gone to that game, but it doesn't matter. This is where I am. This is what I need. This is where I'm going.
You know, there's so much power behind that statement in terms of really understanding that accountability is the key area that needs to be measured today. In terms of really for HR professionals and how they deal with their managers and how managers deal with their team and just HR in general, that I think that this is a great way to, if you want to say, help and go out there and raise some funds for it. So again, Bud, where can they go to donate to help the rehabilitation of this young woman?
Yes, very simple. GoFundMe.com/Heather Abbott. And that's ABBOTT.
But I want to thank you very much for being on the show today and talking about this great woman and this great cause. And again, we support yourmainhr.com. You guys have been a great sponsor and obviously put on a great event. And we'll see you very soon at the New England Strategic Show.
Oh, yes, David. Well, let's have a good summer in between.
Absolutely. Appreciate it.
Bye.
Bye-bye. And now your HR tip of the week. Earlier in the year, when we first started the HR Power Hour, we had a guest, Nancy Martin, on the show. She provided me a true story about someone who worked with her, and it's a great tip for all. So let me read you what she says. It's a true story. I used to work with a guy that every 2 weeks or so, not on a regular schedule, would wear a suit to the office even though it wasn't required for his job. He was a professional in an office, not a warehouse forklift person, so that wasn't that odd, but still a little odd, since typically a dress shirt and pants without a tie would be more appropriate. I asked him why he did this, and he said, quote, "So when I do wear a suit, because I have an interview, it doesn't look that odd." That's good advice, and that's your HR tip of the week. Next week on the HR Power Hour, we're going to be doing a replay, and that is of Kenneth Grodback, president of KGC Direct, and he's going to be talking about the importance of demography. He's the author of the current best-selling book, The Age Curve, How to Profit from the Coming Demographic Storm. He's going to be bringing a whole new perspective to the HR world. He is an internationally respected demographer who has been able to forecast social, commercial, economic, cultural, and political phenomena, and he's going to be talking about how demography affects HR. Thank you for listening, and catch us every week at 2 p.m. on News Talk WLOB 1310 AM or streaming live on WLOBradio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at HRPowerHour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.